profits, let's raise more money. For this episode, Jason and Trevor talk about the power of underwriting in the nonprofit world, why it needs to be utilized more, and how it can be used as a major revenue generator. Let's get right into it.
Great webinar, great topic today. That was really, really cool. We got to share some, we're teasing the boot camp a little bit, the first ever HGA boot camp, April 4th and 5th. We're teasing some of the content out, and we did that with episode 104 of the free webinar series today. It was really, really awesome. We had our friend Amy Myers on, and I learned a lot about underwriting opportunities. I always learn when we talk to her, and I have some notes, as a matter of fact.
Oh, yeah.
So, but,
well, you know, one thing I thought was really, the thing I thought was really interesting about that, you know, we did the little poll and, and those numbers are 25% of the people, the professionals that were on the webinar reported that they are only doing you know, they're just selling tables and tickets.
Correct. So there's a massive opportunity.
50% said that they were just using underwriting to cover expenses, and only 25% said they were making money on it. And I thought that was the biggest deal of all, is that 75% are either losing out on or just using it to break even. They're not using it as a revenue generator. And I thought that was kind of the big deal to me today was, you know, all this underwriting and work, and I would, you know, I just think that if you were to go down and ask some more questions of the folks that were either just selling tables and sponsorship or just selling tables and tickets or just breaking even with their expenses, you would find that they're not raising near as much money as they could. And they're gambling, for the lack of a better word, on what happens at the night of the event. They really don't know what they're going to do until the event's over.
Totally. It's a massive opportunity. That was one giant takeaway that I had. And I implore people that are listening to this that might fall in that category that Jason was just describing, where they're not utilizing the underwriting opportunities that are out there. They're an opportunity. That's exactly what they are. Also, I've heard you say this 100 times. I've heard you say it once. Amy corroborates this, does this to great success. Underwrite everything.
Yeah. Right? Well, you know, but there's two parts to that. I think, you know, we talk about what you can do, but then you have to do, know, it doesn't, it's not just so simple though, as saying, we're going to put this out there. It's picking up the phone. It's getting your contacts, your board, your committee, to make those connections. You know, one of the things that came up today too was about, well, who do we find to ask?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Number one, you ask everybody.
Yeah.
Number two, you got to get up off your tuchus and start making calls. And you know, that's, I really think that's probably where the biggest issue lies most of the time. Number one, either, you know, you've got a disinterested board, unmotivated board, maybe the same thing with your committee. I think it falls on the nonprofit professionals a lot of times. I think it falls on their shoulders. Well, I know it falls on their shoulders to get it all done, but I think the blame falls on their shoulders as well. And I've got a hypothesis on that.
Okay.
You tell me what you think, because you know, this is something that you and I work really hard not to do, because we kind of fall into this category of this, that this happens with. Well, hey, I'll take care of that. I'll do it. I'll take that on. And I think a lot of times nonprofit professionals, you know, whether you're executive director, the CEO, whatever, director development, staff member, and you start thinking, well, I can do, I'll just do that. I'll make that deal for you.
Yeah.
Well, once you do that a few times, everybody just assumes you're going to do it.
All bets are off.
And then all of a sudden you've got a stack of work on, you've piled all this work on yourself and you can't do it. And not, especially not effectively. And so a lot of things start falling through and you start negotiating with yourself saying, well, you know, I could have done that. I need to really make some calls, but I've got these other things I've got to do. And it just piles up.
So you're saying to lean on your committee a little bit more in that scenario?
I think you need, you know, it needs to go around who's going to do it.
Right.
And, you know, and one of the most interesting things that you can find out what's going to really, you know, if you really want to, and I think a lot of times we don't want to know, we don't really want to know the truth, but we need to. And the truth being, well, I'll just give you an example. I'm sitting here doing a people exercise with a group, with a committee. We're going around the room getting all these names. And we've got this really good list. And one of the guys that was given, I mean, he's just rolling out names left and right. Mm-hmm. And then we said, hey, okay, well, whose was this? This is yours, John. I don't remember what his name was, but yeah. This is yours, John. Yeah. Okay. So are you going to call that person? He goes, oh, whoa, hold on a minute.
Yeah.
Well, I never say anything about calling anybody.
I just know the guy. Yeah.
I said, well, why wouldn't you? You're the one that has the relationship. Well, yeah, but because of my business, I wouldn't want them thinking. I'm like, hold on a minute. Then why are you here? And I said that in the committee. Now I'm just the guy that's just in there kind of helping them.
You had nothing to lose. Together. Right?
Yeah. And I said, well, why are you here? And he kind of, I can tell you, he got it. It jacked him up a little bit. He kind of flustered him.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, a couple other people in the room, the executive director and the director of development were like, oh, you know, kind of like, oh, what has he done?
The record went.
And I just said, I said, and I mean this with all due respect. I said, I am absolutely, and I'm not, but I said, then why are you here in the committee? Mm-hmm. They don't need anybody else telling them what to do. I said, you know, that's what happens. I said, if we're not working, then we're just advising. And if we're advising,
we need your help, brother.
Yeah, we need workers, not chiefs. And it was a really interesting turn that did. And, you know, I think he was taken a little bit aback. I think that it was very uncomfortable. And then the most miraculous thing came out of that. He said, well, you know, I guess I could make a couple of calls.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's what we're talking about. That's why you're here, because you can do this. I said, you're the guy that has a relationship. Yeah. Not one of your people are going to sit there and go, well, God. Now, I said, what might make him uncomfortable is if you give him my name for me to call him.
Right.
That's going to be a lot less comfortable than if you call him.
They don't
know
me, man.
Yeah. I was like, then if they sit there and go, hey, you know, I'm on this committee. We're raising some money for a great cause, and I think you would be great. This would match with what you're doing. I'd just like to shoot you over an email with some opportunities to help. I don't think that's going to – that's never offend. I've never been offended by that. Because you're not leveraging me. You're just asking me, would you take a look at it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're not calling with any expectation. Yeah. Of course you want some help. It's my favorite thing to say right now, Jason, but you're talking about people call it setting boundaries or having an uncomfortable conversation. I call it lately, be kind yet firm. And you were firm.
Yeah.
You have no ill intent. You have no ill intent. And, you know, the gentleman, you know, snapped back and said,
well,
he
responded to it.
I can't do that.
And I think what happens is we get in this deal. I don't want to put, and I've just been around it long enough. I don't want to offend the board member. I don't want to offend the committee member. Well, you're not offending him. It's not to trying to offend. And if you're trying not to, you're probably going to offend him anyway. If you're so worried about offending somebody that you can't ask him to do a simple thing like, you know, do their job, the reason that they're on the committee and the board in the first place, then you're probably going to offend them anyway. And I think that's what happens. So they just don't do anything. They take, you know, the nonprofit professional takes it all upon themselves. They're sitting there doing that. And then they get overwhelmed because they're burnt out and everything. Yeah. I mean, you can't do that.
So we've established that we definitely want to implore the help of the committee, and we should be doing that more.
They're not there to tell you what to do. This is one of the things I think this gets so confusing. This gets so confusing by so many people so many times.
Right.
You know, they call it a committee. Well, the fundraising committee. Well, yeah, they're there to give some input and some feedback, but they're not there to tell the director of development or the nonprofit, you know, the executive director, or the staff what to do. Yeah. That's not what their job is.
That's not their job. Yeah.
But it happens all the time, because you hear somebody go, well, let me take this to my committee. Well, let me see what the committee says. Let's see what the committee. And it's one of two things. It's either one, they don't want to make a decision, or it's a cop out, or they've allowed this change in dynamics to happen where the committee is, you know, you're the paid person. You're the person that's been paid, you know, duly paid by the board. If you're the executive director,
do you think the development of directors or whoever's in charge, CEO, whoever it might be, they do that because it defers the blame. It defers that decision making.
No, I think that they're scared. I think they're scared to death. They're going to piss somebody off, and somebody's going to go to the board, or somebody's going to go
hurt
something.
Someone's feelings.
And somebody's going to. Yeah, I do. I really think that they're just, they walk around on eggshells all the time.
That's a tough position to be in.
Yeah, but if they don't have to be.
No, I agree.
But they don't have to. And I think that's because they're making an assume, they're assuming that's what it is on their own. And that's not the case. Yeah. Occasionally, you know, somebody's going to get upset and call you in there and they want to talk to you about something. But if you're mission focused, if you've got a plan, you've got, you know, goals and objectives, and you're working to create those goals and objectives, then you can do it. Now, if it's just, well, whatever. And that's why I think it's, you know, if you notice something that Amy talked about, you know, as a national organization, when they have, she has her staff going around to all over the country and they have a committee. Yeah. They give the committee, here's your parameters of decisions you get to make within the context of the MDA. You know, for them, it's the MDA. So this is the way we do, we raise money. This is how we do it.
She lays those boundaries down quick and early,
Often. They say, this is where you do, like, you know, we are going to make money on this. We're not going to do this for nothing. You know, we're here to raise money. It's a charity. We're here to raise money. We're going to raise money. And so, you know, they give that. And I think it just, it releases, for lack of a better term, the power of the committee, the power of the board to go and do what they're supposed to do.
Not in closing or anything like that, but another key component of the conversation we had, and just something that people need to hear, I think, is the flexibility of underwriting. And when we ask underwriters and things to make, you know, donations, obviously, and to sponsor certain aspects of the event and underwrite certain aspects of the event, what was interesting to me is be flexible. It's okay to negotiate. I've heard you say this. I've heard Amy say this. We talk about this, and I think it's right. I think it's in line with what people need to hear. And what was interesting to me is that, you know, Amy used an example of a real live event, and you have examples and real life examples for doing this yourself as well, is, hey, we needed $25,000 for a fixed cost, and we knew we couldn't get someone to flip the bill for all 25K, so we chopped it up into $5,000, you know, installments, and we asked five different organizations to underwrite, and we still got our 25K. So I'm just saying, you have the bandwidth to be flexible with your underwriting offers, right? To these high net worth individuals and companies and different foundations that you're asking money out of, right?
Well, you've got the flexibility to do that. But the other thing that she said, and you know, I think this is one where nonprofit, you know, a lot of times nonprofit staff forget about this, is she said, we go back to what we've done in the past.
Okay.
You know, let's go back and see where we're at. What have we done?
If
if it's the first time you're doing it, or you've never done it, well, that it creates a different deal. But you can kind of figure out, well, you know what? We sold 10 tables for $10,000, one table at $25,000, and, you know, and 10 at $2,500. So you kind of can take some averages there. Take the 25 out, sit there and go, okay, we know we're about 7,500 is kind of where the number is.
Yeah.
You know, do some really simple math, and that kind of tells you, okay, well, that's kind of where we know where people like to be. They like to be in that $2,500 to $10,000 range. Okay.
That's our sweet spot. Yeah.
So, I mean, it gives you an idea of how you can do a little research. So you're not just going into it blind, wondering what somebody can or can't do, but just knowing where that comfort level is going to be for them. So they can say yes. You're going into them asking for $50,000, and, you know, they're a $2,500 or, you know, a $5,000 donor level.
There you go.
You're going to knock, you know, you're going to blow their hair back a little bit. Okay. And I'm all for asking for more money.
Totally. But no, you're always nudging people to do that. I think that's awesome, and people need to hear it. Another big aha moment from our conversation was, if you have high net worth individuals that are underwriters, they own companies, they have vendors, they have colleagues, they have partners, underwriters should also be invited to attend. That was something that seems pretty obvious to me, but it's something that we don't discuss very often. Speak to me about that.
Well, so let me give you an example of how I think that goes.
Yeah.
So I pick the phone up, and I you know, we're reaching out to you, and let's just say that you're the president of a bank, and, you know, you guys say, yeah, we want to sponsor this, and we're going to do that. You know, we're sponsoring at a $5,000 level. It's just an example. Mm-hmm. And it comes with a table, and, you know, it just goes through the stuff. And, you know, you take your tickets, your eight tickets, and you just go down and give them to everybody in the lobby, you know, all the tellers and stuff like that, because, you know, you guys were asked, you made the
being
gift.
Kind. Yeah.
But asked to attend is this. If I pick up the phone and I go, hey, Trevor, hey, I know you guys are sponsoring, so thank you so much. But I'm just asking, if you and Shelby and some of your rich, make sure you guys come. I'd sure like to see you there. And, you know, this is my personal invitation for you to come represent your bank, and also, you know, bring some of your folks. This is a really important mission. You know, I'd like to, you know, just have you guys make sure you're going to be there yourself. Mm-hmm. That's a different ask than just,
yeah,
okay, whatever.
Totally. It's deliberate. There's intention.
Well, yeah. I mean, because it's personal. And, you know, maybe you have somebody from the committee reach out and say, hey, Trevor, I know you guys are sponsored, but we just want to make sure you guys come. We'd really like for y'all to be here.
Totally.
And
I know you know this company and I know you know that company. So, you know, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, it just, you know, you get them there because number one, you want them to see what's going on, see who all's there. They may not buy anything. They may or may not, but you know, they're attached to the mission, and you made that personal invitation versus, well, let's just see what happens.
I think it's great. It's a conversation that we're going to keep having. If you're not, like Jason said, I mean, we did a poll with real live webinar and attendees, and some folks are just leaving money on the table, right? That's what we don't want to see.
Yeah, I think it just goes back to that deal about, you know, having a plan and how you're going to go about it. Because a lot of times, you know, the pace of life, the pace of the world and everything like that, especially maybe you're a smaller staff, you don't have a well-developed committee or board, and, you know, it comes up time for the event and you're just like, okay, well, we got, you know, we're trying to get 300 people here. And, you know, we've got 40 tables and we're going to get those tables sold. And, you know, we're hoping for the best. And it kind of gets that way. It's the work before the event that matters, that really matters and makes it success. You can have, you know, the best items, the best auctioneer, but if you don't have anybody there in the room to buy the stuff, it doesn't matter.
Totally. No, I think it's great, man. I think it's great feedback. You and Amy are experts about underwriting and sponsorships. And
I would say she is. I've just observed a lot. She's really,
we're
really
just passing the information. We're passing the information along.
She's a prolific fundraiser. I mean,
She's one of the best in the world. One of the best that we've ever seen. And we're so gracious and so grateful that she's a friend of ours. And if you want to hear more, everyone, don't just listen to episode 104 of the HGA Free Webinar Series. Come to the first ever HGA Boot Camp, April 4th and 5th in Dallas. It's going to be in Richardson, Texas, but in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. You don't have to be from the Dallas-Fort Worth area to attend. It's the first ever HGA Boot Camp, April 4th and 5th. You can go to hgafundraising.com to sign up. Only costs $300. It's going to cover your room, board, everything. World-class speakers, world-class fundraisers.
And this is not just one where you sit down and get preached to. This is actually a workshop that you're going to, you know, we're going to go through the process and how you do it. And you're going to leave with five different fundraisers and all the skills and the processes of how to fulfill those and make them successful fundraisers.
Absolutely. It's going to be full immersion. Not like any fundraising workshop that you've ever witnessed, attended to. No offense to those, but you're going to learn how to fundraise the HGA way, and we're pretty proud of it. It's going to be really, really cool. So sign up. Hey, if you got anything out of this episode, do us a favor, rate, review, download, subscribe, share with someone in your network, share with a friend, and we'll see you on the next one. Thanks so much, brother. That was awesome.
Peace out.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening. If you love our podcast, click the download button, rate us, and follow us on social media at HGA Fundraising. Get out there, start fundraising, and raise more money. See you next time.